The winner of Investec's hashtag What's Your Why campaign was a reminder that disciplined saving and long-term thinking still matter. Investec invited new and current clients to share their personal reasons for saving. If that resonated, their personal cash investment remains available from 100,000 Rand. It's accessible and no private bank account is required, focused on stability, preservation, and competitive interest rates.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan, standing in for your usual host, Asime Nide. Here's what you need to know to start your day. Up first, our partners at Bloomberg get us up to date with the latest global news.
President Trump's naval blockade of the Strait of Hormuz is underway. It cuts off vessels from transiting this vital waterway to and from Iranian ports and other coastal areas. Now, this move came in response to failed negotiations between the U.S. and Iran in Pakistan over the weekend. Now, we are being told the U.S. and Iran are in discussions about holding another round of face-to-face negotiations for a longer-term ceasefire. The goal here is to hold fresh talks before the expiration of the current two-week ceasefire. And one idea is to return to Islamabad for a second round of negotiations. Here is Vice President J.D. Vance speaking on Fox News Channel's Special Report with Brett Baer.
Whether we have further conversations, whether we ultimately get to a deal, I really think the ball is in the Iranian court because we put a lot on the table. We actually made very clear what our red lines were. We also made clear, Brett, that we actually would be very happy. The President of the United States has said he would be very happy if Iran was treated like a normal country, if it had a normal economy, if its people were able to prosper and thrive.
That was Vice President J.D. Vance speaking on Fox News Channel's Special Report with Brett Baer. At the same time, according to Iranian state media, President Masoud Pezeshkian said his country was prepared to continue discussions within a framework of international law and regulations. The leaders of the International Energy Agency, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank met today in Washington, where they discussed responses to the impact of the war in the Middle East. Here is IMF Director Kristalina Georgieva.
We need to understand from the data of the International Energy Agency not only what is the size of the disequilibrium between supply and demand, but also what is happening in terms of infrastructure damage, that even if the war is to stop today and the strait to open, would still have long-lasting impact.
Today in Hungary, incoming Prime Minister Peter Magyar accused the outgoing foreign minister of destroying documents related to European Union sanctions. Here is Magyar speaking through a translator.
We know that people have been destroying documents, just like in the old communist age, that shredders are working full-time, not only in ministries, but also the other background institutions. They are destroying, shredding documents, but that's not going to help.
Now, Magyar has pledged to bring his country back into the European fold and reevaluate Hungary's relationship with Russia. Amazon is in advanced talks to acquire the satellite operator Globalstar. We are told a transaction could be announced as soon as Tuesday. It could accelerate Amazon's efforts to build its low Earth orbit satellite network called Amazon Leo. And such a deal would also signal intensifying competition between Amazon and SpaceX.
Back in South Africa, Alec Hogg looks at how Pretoria may be fumbling a major gas opportunity right on their doorstep.
The cost of energy for every single one of us is determined by what's going on in a part of the world that is so far away. But in the world of global capital, every crisis breeds a reaction. Capitalists seem to never let a good crisis go without having some kind of consequence. And the reaction from the multinational oil giants to what's going on in the Middle East now has been to accelerate an already well-advanced and well-funded pivot that began some years ago. They are actively searching for new, untapped, and most importantly, de-risked geographies to secure the world's energy future. And that brings us to Africa. This continent is rapidly becoming the most exciting unexplored resource frontier on the planet. If you look at the recent offshore discoveries in Namibia by these exact same major oil companies, Total in the forefront there, they indicate phenomenal world-class potential. The excitement in Namibia is so profound that the energy sector believes oil and gas will completely transform the Namibian economy. Analysts are actively predicting that our northwest neighbor of a couple of million people will soon mirror Norway's legendary oil revenues. Think about that. We have another Norway on our doorstep, but with even less people to share the largesse among. No wonder it's so difficult to emigrate to Namibia now, or indeed for foreigners to acquire land there. But now here is where the tragedy of the South African situation comes into sharp, painful focus. The geological features that have sparked this veritable gold rush in Namibian waters don't respect political borders. They extend all the way down the west coast, directly into South African waters. Our geological prospects easily rival Namibia's, all the way down to Cape Town. Yet, if you look at a map of offshore development on the west coast, it's as if a giant invisible wall was erected right at the Orange River Basin. North of that border, i.e. Namibian territory, billions of dollars are flowing, rigs are turning, the nation is preparing to lift its citizens out of poverty. South of that border, nothing but red tape and crickets. Why? Because of a staggering, almost incomprehensible degree of self-harm by the South African government.
Staying with local politics, here's Jordan Hill Lewis laying out his vision for the Democratic Alliance. This is from Hill Lewis's first speech as DA federal leader after being elected over the weekend.
South Africa will never become the country we know it can be until we win this fight. For years, we've thought that we must grow the economy to get law and order. But we also need law and order to grow the economy. It is when we beat crime and the corruption that feeds crime that we will see many more jobs being created in our country. Friends, we can win power in South Africa. We can do it, but only if we govern well for every South African, are present in every community, act as a strong and principled coalition partner, and lead with belief and optimism in our country. That work starts now, it starts today. In just a few months' time, South Africans will choose their councillors and their mayors in the local government elections. If we work hard with focus and discipline, we can win more towns and cities than we've ever won before. Right here in Johannesburg, we know that Gogo Helen's going to be the mayor. If there's a way for our opponents to concede the election now, they should do it. And in Tshwane, with our superstar, Celia Brink. And our star, Katu in Ekurhuleni. And in Cape Town and Nelson Mandela Bay and eThekwini and so many others. And when we win, those will be the first important steps on a longer journey. Because in 2029, our people will choose the national government that will lead this country into a better future. And that is our chance. That is our chance to restore hope in South Africa as a whole and build the country that we all know is possible in our hearts. We all know it's possible. Because I don't know about you, friends, but I am not satisfied being a junior partner in a coalition government. Our ambition must be to lead the national government. That is the next chapter in our party's proud history. That is the next chapter that all of us must write together.
And over to the Middle East, where American President Donald Trump said the U.S. would attack any Iranian vessels that approach U.S. ships in the Strait of Hormuz as his naval blockade took effect. Tyler Kendall reports on Bloomberg Open Interest.
Moments ago, President Trump warning that the U.S. would target any Iranian vessel that approached U.S. ships in the region. That was on, again, a Truth Social post. Tyler Kendall, Bloomberg Washington correspondent, joins us now from the White House. So, Tyler, what is the latest from the president?
Well, this would appear to be an apparent escalation as President Trump takes to Truth Social and vows that if any of Iran's attack boats come near the U.S.'s blockade, then they would be, quote, immediately eliminated. He went on to outline that the U.S. would use the same system it used to target alleged drug trafficking boats in the Caribbean ahead of escalation with Venezuela here on Iranian boats as well. Though, of course, we are likely talking about very different types of vessels. But this comes, as you well know, after Iran had threatened to target ports in the Persian Gulf in retaliation, and after we got the statement from the IRGC saying that any military vessel that enters into the Strait of Hormuz would be considered to be in violation of the ceasefire with the U.S. Now, the administration has shed more plans on its blockade that has started, including in a notice seen by Bloomberg News showing that any vessels that are still in Iranian waters would be subject to, quote, interception, diversion, and capture. U.S. Central Command had outlined last night that this blockade extends to all Iranian ports along the coastline, including east of the Strait of Hormuz, though says that any vessels that are going to or from any non-Iranian ports would not be subject to this. But it's definitely raising the stakes here, Danny, as this White House is trying to put more pressure on Iran's leverage, its financial lifeline, in order to get some agreement when it comes to the nuclear talks this weekend that ultimately did not provide that result that this administration wanted to see.
Back in South Africa, concern is growing in Knysna over collapsing service delivery and serious questions around the town's finances. BizNews journalist Chris Stain spoke to the accountability group's Robert Wynn yesterday.
So in order to summarize this, I mean, like, and especially being a resident and being involved in this quite for quite a while, trying to understand what is actually going on behind the scenes, because you're seeing the service levels drop and seeing those kind of things collapsing. We've seen areas without water. I mean, they spoke in one of the BizNews things that I spoke about, that I watched, was that water shedding is a new load shedding. And we're experiencing that. We have had certain locations like Brenton-on-Sea without water for 4 days. I mean, people canceling their Airbnbs because there's no water. So the state of affairs is really bad. Now, when you look at the finances and the way that they're presented, everything looks great. It looks fantastic. The budget is funded. We're so happy. But then we're not experiencing that on the ground. And that's the thing that we at the accountability group are trying to do, is trying to create more visibility for the average resident to actually understand what is actually going on. We see the degradation. We see things collapsing. We see, I mean, last year there was a leak down the road that ran for 4 months unattended to. We have 8,000 meters that aren't actually being built because they don't work. Those are still haven't been replaced. They're still part of a process that they're trying to get those things now done. But I mean, it's ages now. They've known this stuff for a very long time. So when we look at this budget, it just doesn't make sense. We have a surplus, yet we're not seeing any replacement of actual infrastructure. At the moment, it looks like the municipality is struggling just to deliver basic services, like when a pipe bursts, just to repair the pipe seems that they're struggling. And one of the biggest things is once they've fix the burst pipe, they don't repair the road. The roads remain dug up, and eventually they send someone that comes out and puts a little thin painted coat of, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's not folded tar, it's that black bitumen that they I think they just painted on to try and stop the rainwater washing away all the sand. So it's really bad. And I mean, if you look at our streets, they're just getting worse and worse and worse. So now if we've got a funded budget, why are those things the way that they are?
And closing in Europe, where Hungary's incoming leader has promised sweeping change after defeating Viktor Orban in a dramatic election result over the weekend.
We won not small, but big, very, very big. Together, we changed the Orban regime. Together, we liberated Hungary. We took our homeland back.
For more, I'm joined by Bloomberg's chief Europe correspondent, Oliver Crook, on the ground for us, as he has been throughout this election. Ollie, a lot of superlatives here. It's the end of an era for Orban. Just give us a sense of the significance, the scale of Peter Magyar's victory.
I think everyone was really stunned, even the people that were the most optimistic about the potential ousting of Viktor Orban within the Magyar camp where I was last night on the banks of the Danube, a little bit further out, when we saw just how much of a landslide, a blowout this was from the opposition leader who has staged an absolutely incredible election campaign over the last 2 years. And Lizzie, it's hard to overstate how difficult what he did is. I mean, in Hungary, Viktor Orban controls much of the media, has huge sort of structural advantages, and he still managed to win this two-thirds majority within parliament, which gives him really a free hand to legislate very freely across Hungary. But not only that, Lizzie, that two-thirds majority gives him powers to even change the constitution. So this is a position for this opposition leader coming into power here, really emboldened with a really strong mandate from the Hungarian people. And again, he's going to be inheriting some of the issues that brought down Viktor Orban, whether it's sort of the economic stagnation that we've been talking about. There's, of course, the energy shock, which has no end in sight after what we saw over the weekend in Iran. And this is going to be a very sort of challenging, a bit of an uphill battle. That being said, Lizzie, he has called on a number of the government officials that are loyal to Orban to resign, saying that they've basically betrayed the nation. They've been loyal just to Viktor Orban. So this is really a very key moment. And I got to say, on a personal note, Lizzie, you know, you watch a lot of elections, you cover a lot of these things. This crowd last night, very, very emotional, really feeling the sort of change that we've seen after 16 years of Viktor Orban.
So what does this victory mean for the Hungarian economy? What does it mean for the EU? And crucially, Ollie, what does it mean for the war in Ukraine?
Yeah, I think, Lizzie, what's really interesting is that some of the domestic issues and trying to turn the economy around, having to legislate, trying to break the grip of Viktor Orban, as Peter Magyar claimed that he would do last night, that is going to take a lot of time. What can happen very, very quickly is a change in posture in terms of the geopolitics, in terms of the foreign policy, and that is the expectation that we're getting from Peter Magyar at the highest level. We're expecting a prime minister of Hungary that, yes, is nationalistic, that, yes, still skews to the right, but is going to be much more constructive when it comes to working with the European Union. And as a consequence, as you know, Lizzie, as we've covered very, very extensively, the only person that's been standing between 90 billion euros and Ukraine, that loan from the EU, has been Viktor Orban. The expectation now is that you're going to have a regime here in Hungary that is going to be much more constructive in dealing not just with Ukraine, but a number of different issues at the European level. That gives the Europeans a much more consolidative sort of footprint going forward in their sort of political ambitions on the global stage, to say nothing of the fact, Lizzie, that J.D. Vance came here to Hungary to campaign alongside Viktor Orban. That failed. He then went to Pakistan for those negotiations. That failed. Some real questions about the potency of Trump foreign policy.
That's your BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
The winner of Investec's hashtag What's Your Why campaign was a reminder that disciplined saving and long-term thinking still matter. Investec invited new and current clients to share their personal reasons for saving. If that resonated, their personal cash investment remains available from 100,000 Rand. It's accessible and no private bank account is required, focused on stability, preservation, and competitive interest rates.